Welcome to Nature Finds a Way, a pop culture biology podcast where we nerd out about biology facts and fiction in some of our favorite books, movies, and TV shows.
I'm Lindsay, and she's Sarah, and this is episode one,
Finding Nemo.
We are marine biologists in recovery, and best friends, and nerds.
Pop culture nerds, especially.
Pop culture nerds.
Pop culture and biology nerds.
Yes, and one of our favorite things to do is to sit in a movie and think about how unscientific something is.
Or be impressed by how scientific it is.
That's also true. It makes me very excited when something goes correctly in a science way.
Yeah. So we figured we would share that with you. We love podcasts and have loved podcasting and think it's a great way for us to have an excellent excuse to watch the full range of quality of movies and talk about the biology and the science therein.
Yes, exactly. I think I'm really excited about this because we're going to get to watch some of our favorite movies and a couple of TV shows, and then we're going to get to watch some really, really bad movies.
Yeah.
And it is going to be great.
It's going to be delightful.
Yes.
We figured we'd start off our first episode with one of our favorite movies, like favorite mm-hmm, movies. Mm-hmm. It's a little film you might have heard of called Finding Nemo.
Yay! One of my favorites as ever.
Indeed. So, Linz, do you want to give us a little backstory on Finding Nemo for all the people who haven't seen it?
Sure. It is the fifth Pixar movie after, I know these. Toy Story, Toy Story 2, Bugs Life, and Monsters, Inc.
Yep.
All classics, giant hits, and then Finding Nemo came out in May 2003, and I would have to say, to quote a founding father, that they blew us all away. And it was absolutely incredible. It was the first Pixar to win Best Animated Feature in the Academy Awards, and I think it's really the best one, although I can't really make that decision. It's too hard. But I remember going with my biology nerded friends.
Yeah, I don't remember who I went to with. I think, just with my university friends.
And I just remember having so much fun and then literally not being able to breathe the first time Dory speaks whale.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, basically. Basically, I remember going and just being blown away by the great story.
Yeah.
But also being blown away that, like, somebody could make a movie about something that I loved so much.
Exactly. And that was kind of, like, that was definitely the first one. You know, there's Jaws, which we'll talk about, and obviously Little Mermaid, which we'll talk about.
Yeah.
And other movies that are based in the sea, but nothing that was this accurate.
Yes.
And realistic. Like,
Vision-wise?
That's not a way.
Visually?
Visually.
Yeah.
And, yeah, and it was just great. And it took, I don't even know how many times I saw it in the theater. I'm going to say probably three. It's the summer. And it was just stunning.
Well, and shortly after the movie came out, like maybe even that May, or like that May or June, my friend Erica and I did a road trip to California. And we're just like blown away by like, what do you mean you can buy stuffed fish at Disneyland?
Yeah.
We did not buy any of them because we had recently finished university and had
no
money. But we were still like, the fact that this huge, big budget, science-y movie came out, and everybody, like learned to love, like
stuff that
like little tiny fish that like live in sea anemones and like I knew about them, I'd seen them, I'd been in Australia a couple of years before, and like obviously I'd seen them at aquariums and stuff, but just completely blown away.
Completely, yeah. And, yeah, so if anybody needs a quick synopsis, it's about a fish and his son,
yeah.
He's super protective, and then his son gets taken by a dentist off of the Great Barrier Reef, and then he meets another fish, Dory, and they go on and hijinks ensue, rescue mission. And I'm just going to leave it at that, because if you need a synopsis, stop listening to this podcast.
Yeah,
go watch Finding Nemo Come back to us. There was a sequel in 2016, Finding Dory, which we did not watch and we will not be talking about because that podcast would be 7 hours long.
Yeah, we watched part of it.
Yeah.
And that's enough said on that.
We're just going to leave it at that. So, let's talk about the first glaring error that is the problem with Finding Nemo if you're a biologist.
The entire premise of the movie would be the first glaring error.
So at the beginning of the movie is the super sad part that you thought was really sad until Up came out.
Yeah.
When Marlin and Coral,
yes,
the mom, are very happy because they have 300 babies.
Little baby eggs.
Yep. Eggs. And then a barracuda shows up and eats Coral. That part is probably highly accurate. I have no idea if barracudas eat clownfish. It seems like a very small meal.
Yeah, no, I think a barracuda would accidentally eat a clownfish if a clownfish was next to a bigger fish. Yes,
but I don't know how, like, well, I guess barracudas do go in the reef.
It could be like
reef.
A baby barracuda.
Yeah, and barracudas go in the reef.
They do.
Not as much.
Yeah. And at night, they definitely do.
Yeah.
So if that were to have happened in real life, you have a male and a female clownfish and a clutch of eggs. Generally, they would have been found not just as, like, one male and female, but a group with a dominant female and then a dominant male and then a bunch of other male clownfish. Mm-hmm. If the female were to have been killed, the most dominant male would turn into a female.
Yes. So Marlin would have become Marlina.
Yeah. Nemo's mom. Yeah. And then, there's a reason that they didn't do this in the Disney movie, that male would then generally mate with the next dominant male in the group, which would have been Nemo, because he was the only one.
Yeah.
So,
which is why they live in a group and not just in a family.
Yes.
Because
interbreeding. Yeah. So the technical term for this, there's probably like a variation of hermaphrodite. So hermaphrodite is when an animal can turn, either be simultaneously male and female, or go from male to female, or female to male. So in this case, they go from male, all clownfish are born male. In a group, the largest one, when there is no other female, turns into a female when it gets old enough. So science.
And so there's an obvious reason, and like they picked clownfish, I assume, because their name is clownfish and they're brightly colored. And
I think also they do live in like family-ish groupings. They're not like
true.
A mom,
they're
dad,
not.
And baby family, but they live in groups. And like when they're big, they are like really charismatic when you watch them, especially if you get a chance to like watch them for a long period of time, because like they have really neat behavior, like swimming in and out of the anemones and stuff. Like that behavior that they do is really accurate and like really fun to watch. Mm-hmm. So yeah, like I'm sure they picked clownfish mainly because of cute factors.
Yes, and that's fine. And you know, it's not like we will get into whole other issues of science that ruins storylines in Disney movies as we continue this podcast.
Yes, but yeah, it totally doesn't ruin.
No, it doesn't. If they did an accurate science, they would not have this movie.
Yeah.
They'd have a completely different movie.
Completely different movie that would
not
have been harder to explain to children.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, but so like sort of that beginning scene at the, like when they're in the reef and things there, other than the like sexual reproduction of clownfish, is pretty accurate. Like coloration, habitat, they pick geographically appropriate animals. They like things are pretty relatively sized properly.
Yeah, proportionally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of my favorite scenes of the whole thing, and maybe we'll insert a clip here. We'll find out.
Yeah.
Let's name the zones. Let's name the zones of the ocean. Yeah, I don't remember the words. Anyways, you know what, open sea?
Something like that.
Yeah.
It's Mr. Ray. And then he says my favorite line ever. Is there anything I can do, sir? I am a scientist. Which is how I like to introduce myself to strangers, if I talk to strangers, which I don't.
No.
But maybe
only
one day.
Only indirectly via podcasts. Yeah. So all the zones that Mr. Ray lists in his oceanography lesson are complete legit zones. Yeah, like the reef looks really accurate. Like obviously cartoonified like all the animals do, but
yeah,
looks really accurate. And then, yeah, Nemo goes on a little adventure, and it's kind of ironic that the whole premise of the show, of like, or the movie, of this animal getting taken out of the wild for the pet trade, is then, like, what has since happened to clownfish.
Yeah, and their pet
and
trade.
And their pet trade problems
yeah.
that were, like, minor before and now
really
are bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like Dalmatians.
Yeah. Clownfish are hard to look after.
Yeah.
Like, I know people who have done it professionally, and it's a lot of work. So, like, it's not a thing that an 8-year-old can do.
No. Don't buy clownfish.
Don't Yeah. Really, most reef fish are.
Reef fish are, just get a betta.
Or, like, just get a stuffy.
Yeah, that also works. Way less work.
Yeah. But, in general, like, saltwater fish are really, really hard to look after.
Yeah.
Even for professionals. So, rant on that over. At one point during the adventure, Lynn, do you want to talk about the next most
prevalent error? Yeah, so, when we talked about this, one of the reasons we did this one first is because there was some obvious errors, but there's actually not a lot. We'll touch on some more stuff they did correctly, but the other biggest error, and it's, again, it's storyline-based, we wouldn't be able to do this part of the storyline because of the science and the biology, but when Marlin and Dory end up going into the whale after the whale speak, they escape by going to the back of the throat and being blown out through a stream of water out of the humpback's blowhole. That is 100% incorrect. If that has happened, whale would be dead from drowning.
Yeah.
Because there would be water going through his blowhole. So for whales, unlike humans, the throat and nasal passages do not connect. So if they had gone to the back of the throat, they just would have been swallowed. And that would have been the end of the story, and it would have been much sadder. And the other biggest part about that, which is a common misconception in all whales, is that they're not actually spurting water.
Nope.
They're spurting air because they're breathing. Just like we breathe, they just are more noticeable because they're larger than us.
Much larger.
The water that is around it that sometimes makes things look like hearts when you have two blowholes in certain types of whales, or also sometimes if you create the sun correctly, you get a rain blow because there's moisture and light and then it's rainbow and it's magical and you're in a Lisa Frank poster. But the water that appears around it is because of the water surrounding the blowhole, because of course it's wet because you're in the water, and also the whatever
like moisture,
effect of the fact that their breath is warm and the air moist. And it's coming out and it's cold.
Yes.
So that is why it looks like whales are blowing water, but they are actually not. Yeah. They're just breathing like you and me.
Yep.
No
water comes out.
That part is not accurate.
Yeah.
But I do know that humpbacks do go in the Sydney Harbour sometimes, so it is deep enough.
Yeah.
So that's correct.
Yeah, like geographically that was correct, and like until they went out the blowhole, things about the whale were also correct.
Also correct the vocalization. One, again, as I mentioned before, one of the funniest parts, the not necessarily Dory's vocalization, but the actual noises that the whale made were correct. They were the correct type of whale. That wasn't like playing dolphin over whale music as has happened in other movies.
A lot. So that's what humpbacks actually
sound like.
So. Yeah. Which is pretty cool. And yeah, like, I think that's probably one of my favorite points too, is when Dory tries to speak whale, and like, I won't say I've never done it.
Oh no. I do it all the time.
All the time.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, and now at this point in the movie, traveling down to Sydney, one of the other things that is actually pretty accurate is the East Australia Current is an actual current. It flows in that direction. And as you notice, they travel from like really clear water, brightly colored fish as they go further and further south. The water gets a little like greener, darker, murkier, and the fish get less colorful, more temperate coloration, so like silvery, browny fish. And so that's also like a really cool detail. Like, it makes sense story-wise to do that, like to have this transition and things get a little scary and stuff. But it also is appropriate.
Yeah, like, and then when they even go, when they're in the harbor, it's like dirty and gross and
silty, like because there's like rivers and stuff there.
Yeah, it's super silty and there's lots of algae and
And then, so the schooling fish, I don't know, I love the schooling fish. I think it's like such a clever bit. Obviously, like, they don't make shapes to communicate, but also fish don't talk, so like,
so whatever,
it fits in that level of accuracy. But like the comparative, like, personalities, I guess, is the right word, of the schooling fish versus, like, the independent fish. Like, even fish that aren't, like, the main characters in the movie, like, talk independently and things, whereas, like, the school of fish talk as a school of fish.
And they do manage to make, some of them manage to make incredible sizes and shape circles of bait balls when they're being baited and they're trying to. The whole point of schooling, of course, is to just be bigger than your mm-hmm. predator, and the odds are that you won't get eaten because you're what part of
somebody else,
and then somebody else will get eaten.
Yeah, so that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
What else? In terms of accuracy, seagulls really are that annoying.
Yes, 100%.
Like
they ruin everything.
Yeah, and like turning their vocalizations into mine.
Mine. That completely accurate.
Legit.
They're the worst.
Legit. It's actually kind of bizarre that we haven't had any seagulls interrupt this podcast yet.
That is because the pigeons have been terrorizing me, so I've been terrorizing them back. So hopefully that they are evolving and will stop coming and pooping on my balcony continuously. One of them walked through that pile of poop.
Ew.
But yeah, you mean just in the air.
I meant like just seagulls in the air, not...
It's May long weekend, they're all on the beach eating people's hot dogs.
That is true. That is true. We live near the beach.
Yeah.
Sorry
about that diatribe rant about the pigeons who are infesting my balcony. Anyway, gross. Let's go talk about other things that are correct.
Other things that are correct. I guess like the dentist's aquarium setup was pretty accurate.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not super realistic to have a sea star
in
there, but I don't know that much about tropical sea stars, so maybe it is legit.
Yeah, I just, fine. Aside from professionally, I don't know if people actually keep sea stars. I guess technically you could, it would just seem like a lot of work.
So I worked in a very small restaurant when I was traveling in Australia, and as part of our restaurant, no, it was a big restaurant, and as part of our restaurant we had a small aquarium, and my job was to look after the aquarium. And also put the bread in the oven in the mornings. It was a weird job. and so we had like a temperate tank. It was in Perth. So we had a couple tanks that were more local to Perth, which is like sort of San Francisco-ish in terms of ocean stuff.
I'm sorry. I just like, got started thinking about Dory and the temperature changes of the water and I got mad again.
Oh, yeah.
It's fine. Don't think about it.
So... and we had some sea stars, and they were pretty chill. We just, like, yeah, we had a couple. They were really small, and they were super low maintenance.
Yeah, so. Yeah, I don't know.
So, probably legit. Shaking a bag with a fish in it and or taking a flash photo of a fish does bother them
that much. Does bother them quite a lot. So, PSA, do not have your flash on if you are lucky enough to be swimming with fish.
Yeah, either, like, in the ocean or at an aquarium. Like, same thing. At an aquarium, it's mainly because you will get a nice picture of yourself
reflected in the glass. But if you are in the sea, please do not use your flash.
It is mean.
Yes.
Yeah. And, yeah, like, don't shake your bag of fish.
Mm-hmm. Also true.
They still experience gravity, just in a different way.
It's just in a different way than we do.
It's not magic. Do we have anything else? I don't have anything else.
We're going to talk about the anglerfish.
Oh, yeah.
The anglerfishes are real and exist and look exactly like that and have the lure, light lure.
Some of them do have the lure. Some of them do.
And also have crazy sexual reproduction
with
the males, but let's not even go there. If you want to find out more, Google it and watch the David Attenborough YouTube.
Yes. Actually, I have several anglerfish recommendations. So, David Attenborough. There's also... true story or true facts about the anglerfish. Mm-hmm. And then Hank Green has a song about anglerfish and all of them are amazing.
Yes.
And we'll put them in the show notes.
Because yes.
Because you should just learn more about anglerfish.
Yes, because they're really cool. That is one of the small problems that we had with that movie is when they go down to see the anglerfish are incredibly deep sea fish and coral reef fish would never be able to survive down there because as the deeper you go into the ocean, the higher the pressure gets.
Yeah.
Like, it's quite intense.
Quite intense,
And the Marlin and Dory would just implode.
Implode. They would get crushed.
They would collapse on ourselves because similarly with scuba diving or, again, also with flying, like, that's just the pressure. The air bubbles. That's why people get the bends because of pressure.
Yeah.
So it would just, they would be.
Yeah, dead. And the same thing if, like, most fish, especially smaller fish, don't do well going, like, up and down through the water column. Like, so deep water fish generally stay deep. Shallow fish, like coral reef fish, stay shallow. Especially, like, tangs, which is what Dory is. And anemone fish, like clownfish, would be, like, I don't know, 20 meters?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
Not very deep.
Not very deep.
They probably could be found deeper than that, but, like, they live in and around coral reefs, so, like, they need the sunlight for the plants to grow to make the food that they eat. So,
yeah. All three sharks are great, and they are a great reminder that sharks are friends.
Yes.
And even though two out of the three of them are actually known man-eaters. Well, actually, are mako sharks? I think they might be one of them.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's so rare in general.
That might be actually why they picked the mako.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
I don't know.
But sharks, just because they can eat men, doesn't mean that they do. We'll get more into that when we do our Jaws episode. Oh, but sharks are friends. Don't hurt them. Don't be scared of them. Just be aware of them.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of other things in that movie and a lot of other things in Australia that will kill you before a shark does.
Oh, yeah.
100%.
Sharks are, like, the least part of your concern.
Speaking of which, first of all, I learned on trivia that Crush says dude 21 times in this movie.
Ooh, nice.
But Crush, is, of course, the green sea turtle. Mm-hmm. And so I learned what I was helping being a research assistant for turtle research. Green sea turtles, if they bite you, your forearm will break a bone. Loggerhead sea turtles will break all the bones in your forearm.
Yeah. And, like, maybe take your arm with them.
Because green sea turtles eat seaweed and kelp, and loggerheads eat bivalves, so they need a stronger jaw. If you think about, like, birds and how they need strong jaws to get through nuts, it's kind of the same deal to get through shells.
No thanks. Yes.
Loggerheads are scary.
Yes. Yeah, like, I would be more scared of seeing a giant loggerhead than a shark.
Yeah. Crush is not scary. Obviously.
No, Crush is awesome. So
and Squirt, of course, is so adorable. And back to the sharks, when that joke about the 1,200 teeth is, or whatever the actual line is correct, sharks do have a ridiculous amount of teeth all the time because
they have many rows.
Many rows because they fall out very easily because of the nature of their food, which is not men.
It is fish.
It is fish.
And but other things.
Other things.
Nice. I guess the other one we had was when they run into the dolphins, and first of all, the dolphins are like super bros.
Yep.
Accurate. But also the dolphins don't talk underwater. They talk above water because they need to breathe air. And
in order to talk,
dolphins can make a lot of different noises when they're underwater. The noise that they make is like an echolocation noise. So it's like way high frequency. It's not sounds that we would hear, but then the noises they make above water are different.
Yeah. Yes.
And so they need air to make them.
If dolphins could talk English.
Yeah.
Then they would have to do it above the water.
Yes.
So that is great. And as opposed to the part when Marlin goes above the water.
Yeah.
And he is gasping for breath.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't breathe above water.
They're having to like hold their water.
Hold their breath.
Hold their gills. I don't know what the term would be. Yeah. Yeah. No. Fish don't do well above water.
No.
True story.
They don't like.
So that probably brings us to the end of our Finding Nemo adventures.
Yeah, those are all the things I can think of. I haven't actually watched it in a long time, but it doesn't matter because it's great.
Yeah, we were able to do this whole podcast with just our memories.
Yes, because it's a great movie and we're giant nerds, as we said.
I know, and I can't wait. Like, we have small children in our lives that are too small to watch Finding Nemo, but we are excited to share that experience with them.
Yes.
So, if you have not watched Finding Nemo, again, how did you make it through this whole podcast?
Do that.
And if you have watched Finding Nemo, let us know what you found. Did we teach you something? Did Finding Nemo teach you something way back in 2003? Yeah.
And remember, all drains don't lead to the ocean. Dispose of your fish properly. Not dead.
Oh. Okay, so, yeah. All drains don't lead to the ocean in terms of, like, fish won't be able to get back to the ocean, but all drains do lead to the ocean in terms of pollution.
Yes. Also, they're very true. That's a great point.
Like, what are you saying?
I was trying to say because there was like a rash of people flushing their fish, trying to set their parents' expensive tropical fish free by flushing them down the toilets in like Omaha.
Yeah.
So that didn't work out very well.
That is true.
On the other hand, all drains lead to the ocean, so don't dump bleach down them.
Yeah. Or other
things.
Yeah, I think that's probably about all. That brings us to our delightful conclusion.
Sure.
So if you want to check us out, you can subscribe to our podcast on iTunes Podcasts or wherever you like to get your podcasts. Just search for Nature Finds a Way. You can find us on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook at Nature Finds a Pod. And our website is
naturefindsapod.com.
Whoop whoop.
Go team.
Go team. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
Yep. Bye.
Bye.